This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Sandwell News, due with you on Saturday, the 25th of April.
This week, sunrise will be at 5:40, sunset at 8:30. Temperatures will be quite low at around 7 degrees at the start of the week, and probably no warmer later in the week.
Well, it might be colder next week, but apparently we can look forward to some warmer weather Friday and Saturday. At least I hope so. Before we get to the news, which is the main business of the talking news, here's a list of activities coming up at SVI next week, which I've put together using the information they provided a few weeks ago.
Parkride accessible cycling is back in Sandwell Valley, Monday 10:30am to 1pm. SVI and Mencat Parkride have partnered up again to bring a series of four free accessible cycling sessions to Sandwell Valley. In the past, these sessions have been very popular, and we're keen to welcome back familiar faces as well as anyone new who's curious to give cycling a go. Contact us to book your place. Sandwell Talking News AGM, Monday the 27th of April, 1pm to 3:30pm, SVI Common Room. If you're interested in hearing more about Sandwell Talking News or getting involved, you're welcome to come along to the annual general meeting. There will be a guest speaker too. Supported gym sessions, Tuesday 10am to 12pm at Portway Lifestyle Centre. Break a sweat and boost your energy with fellow SVI members. From treadmills and bikes to weights, there's something for everyone and plenty of support to help you along the way. It's a fun social way to stay fit and active all year round, rain or shine. Tuesday, 1pm to 2:30pm, line dancing at Dartmouth Central Club. Put on your dancing shoes and join Ray and Jean for a lively dancing session full of fun and feel-good moves. Whether you're looking to stay active, improve your balance or simply meet new people, it's a perfect chance. Absolute beginners are welcome. Just come along and enjoy. We'd love to see you on the dance floor. Aquafit restarts on Wednesday the 29th of April for 12 weeks. The gentle toning activity in the water is suitable for everyone with expert instructor Alison. Contact SVI if you're interested. Showdown Thursday morning, Portway Lifestyle Centre. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport, similar to table tennis and air hockey. Designed for blind and visually impaired people, but anyone can play. Contact the SVI office for more information. SVI's women's group invites you to a taste of something different on Thursday the 30th of April at 12:30pm at Oak Cafe, 614 Bearwood Road, B66, 4BW. Dig into Vietnamese comfort food and more at Oak Cafe. Whether you fancy the classic pho beef or the lighter pho chicken, the bowls are packed with authentic flavours. There are plenty of other options too, including cake for those with a sweet tooth. Made with care and top-notch ingredients, you will leave the nice full tummies and a smile on your face. Let us know if you're coming so we can reserve the tables. You will order and pay on the day.
And just one minor bit of detail about that: the showdown sessions on Thursday run from around 10:30 to 11:30, and I put together that what's on from a previous newsletter circulated to SVI members a few weeks ago, so I trust it's accurate. And so on to some of the news readings from this week's papers.
Some of the pieces from the Express and Star. Wednesday, April the 15th. Three in court over attack on Israel military supplier. Two supermarkets face unhealthy food charges. Plans for 2,700 plot burial ground. The rich and powerful are gagging reporters. Thursday, confusion over Albion NFL hearing. Patients suffering doom of wrong test results and delays. Man charged over shop thefts. Pensioner who dealt drugs on streets. Friday, golf club fears for its future. Woman killed by dog attacks. Comment: vaccination myths and compensation. Saturday, a chance to book your COVID jab. Youths plead not guilty to murder. Police arrest two more men after shooting. Lamb prices soaring. Monday, food bank bid to reopen food centre. Toy recreates Royal Paddington Tea Party. A red flag for fake weight loss jabs. Trams ready to run on new line.
And to add to that rundown of some of the things you'll hear in the news, there's a piece in Tuesday's paper about an American TikTok performer who couldn't make out the Black Country accent, but he very much enjoyed his visit to the Black Country Museum. And seeing that we've got a bit more time than usual for the main news section, I'm including two Albion match reports, and of course they seem to be out of the woods as far as relegation is concerned, depending of course on how the EFL hearing goes concerning their money matters. So here's the first day's news from James, and it's good to have him back with us.
This is James Brodie bringing to you stories from the Express and Star dated the 15th of April. Trio in court over damage to company. Three people, including one from the Black Country, have been remanded in custody, accused of causing an estimated £2.4 million worth of damage to a company said to be linked to the Israeli military. Stephen Davies, 57, Ian Roberts, 51, and Dolores Nappi, 34, allegedly smashed computer screens, servers and other electronic equipment after breaking into Keysight Technology premises in Fleet, Hampshire, in the early hours of Sunday, West Midlands Magistrates Court heard yesterday. The company produces parts for the Elbit Systems drones, which Defence Barrister Kate McFadden told the court is the largest weapons supplier to Israel. The parts are then used in ongoing genocide in Gaza, Ms. McFadden, defending all three, said. All three are charged with aggravated burglary with a hammer and criminal damage to property. Roberts of McDougall Road, Wensbury, is also charged with assaulting an emergency worker. District Judge Sam Guzzi remanded in custody Davies of Slade Road, Birmingham, Nappy of Tariff Crescent, Lewisham, South East London, and Roberts. They will all next appear at the Old Bailey up May the 1st. First ads under new less healthy food rules banned. Watchdog deems promotions by Lidl and Iceland to have breached regulations. This story is brought to you by Josie Clark. Ads for supermarkets Lidl and Iceland have become the first to be banned under new rules governing less healthy foods and drink. The rules, which came into effect at the beginning of the year, are part of the government's efforts to tackle childhood obesity for preventing ads for food and drink that is high in fat, salt and sugars, that's HFSS, appearing on television between 5:30 a.m. and 9 p.m. and online at any time. The new ban, applying to products to fall within 13 categories considered to play the most significant role in childhood obesity, including soft drinks, chocolates and sweets, pizza and ice creams, but also breakfast cereals and porridges, sweetened bread products and main meals and sandwiches. Products that fall into these categories are then also assessed as to whether they are less healthy based on a scoring tool that considers their nutrients and whether products are high in saturated fat, salt or sugar. Only products that meet both of the two criteria are included in the restrictions. The Advertising Standards Agency, that's the ASA, said an Instagram post for Lidl Northern Ireland by influencer Emma Kearney featured the grocer's cheese pretzel, which was categorised as an HFSS and therefore did not fall within the restrictions, and its pan Swiss product, which was classified as both HFSS and sweetened bread product and was therefore banned under the new rules. Lidl said that the ad had been removed and that they had liaised with their marketing agency to ensure that all future ads complied with the new rules. In a separate case, Iceland confirmed that two ads included a tub of Switzel sweet treats and a packet of Chupa Chupa laces, a bag of chewy disco sticks and a bag of Haribo elf surprises, which were all classified as HFSS. They also provided nutrient profile information from their supplier, which confirmed that Pringles sour cream and onion crisps, also included in the ads, were not an HFSS product. Iceland's luxury Aberdeen Angus beef roasting joint, vegetable spring rolls, sticky chicken skewers and Lurpak spreadable butter, which are also included in the ads, did not fall into the new restrictions. The ASA did not uphold a complaint against an Instagram post by influencer John Fisher, known as many as Big John, which featured him promoting menu items as a new German doner kebab outlet because the specific items shown in the ads were not classified as less healthy foods. Watchdog also cleared a TV ad on the beach promoting free airport lounge access, which features a boy approaching a buffet and taking a chocolate ring donut. The ASA said viewers would see the ads as showing as an example of what was available in the lounge rather than for the donut itself, meaning it did not break the rules. ASA Chief Executive Guy Parker said the initial rulings are an important step in building a clear picture of how the rules are applied in reality. We will continue to play our role in administering and enforcing them, including by using tech-assisted proactive monitoring. Plans lodged for new 2,700-plot burial ground. A 2,700-plot cemetery has been planned for a site on the Black Country and Birmingham border. A total of 2,721 new plots would be built on land between Handsworth Cemetery and Sandwell Park Golf Club off Birmingham Road, West Bromwich, according to the application. This would help tackle a well-recognised shortage of burial space in the region. The cemetery would be built on the site of an old bungalow and has become underutilised and overgrown after the last tenant, who kept horses and other farm animals, died several years ago. Designs accompanying the application show that the cemetery would be bordered by the golf course's 11th, 13th and 14th holes. A statement with the application said the land currently comprises largely unmanaged, overgrown ground which previously supported a residential bungalow and small-scale agricultural use. At present, the site does not function as a public park, recreation ground or community open space. The site is privately owned and not publicly accessible. It therefore does not provide publicly available recreational open space and does not operate as part of the Public Accessibility Open Space Network. Plans submitted to Sandwell Council by PE Property 29 includes 30 parking spaces. The rich and powerful are abusing the legal system to gag reporters. Local journalism is the lifeblood of democracy, and it must be protected from abusive legal threats aimed at silencing our reporting. Today, we join industry calls for the government to commit to stamping out strategic lawsuits against public participants. That's SLAPPS. Today, media outlets across the country are joining a day of action to call for the UK government to include anti-SLAPP protections in the forthcoming King's Speech. Journalists do not become journalists to prepare for court hearings. They join newsgroups, submit FOI requests, ask questions, report from council hearings and courts, and speak to as many people as they can because they have a story to tell. They also know that local communities do better where there is more information in the public domain, not less. Journalism is vital for local democracy to hold power in check, to give a voice to the community, ensuring no one is beyond scrutiny. However, unchecked wealth and influence has a powerful ally in the quest to prevent questions being asked and sheltering itself from uncomfortable attention, the British justice system. Abusive lawsuits, sometimes called SLAPPs, that's strategic lawsuits against public participants, allow those with money to threaten costly and time-intensive court action to prevent reporting being made public or to force the published work from the public eye. Abusive lawsuits are not genuine attempts to address flaws in the journalists' works. Indeed, many journalists are sued for just asking questions or requesting comment from someone who has not even read the piece before deciding to sue them. SLAPPs are attempts to silence reporting and cordon off those deserved of scrutiny from any form of public accountability. All forms of journalism are vulnerable for this sort of abuse from legal bullies. For investigating Putin's rise to power, Catherine Belton was threatened by multiple Russian oligarchs and a Russian state-owned company. Paul Radu, the co-founder of OCCRP, was sued by an Azerbaijani MP in London, even though neither were based in the UK. The UK Treasury were only too happy to allow disgraced and sanctioned Russian warlords Yevgeny Prigozhin to sue the Belikral founder, Elliot Higgins, and the legal actions, including threats of imprisonment, aimed at the Londoner by the subject of the reporting. But these tactics are not limited to a national or international outlets. Local journalists and smaller outlets can also be targeted by the same or similar abusive legal threats. Journalists are not the only ones who can be targeted to spike a story. SLAPPs have been used against survivors of sexual assault who have named their attackers to warn other women. They have been used against local campaigners working tirelessly to improve public services for themselves and their neighbours. They have been used against former patients who gave posted reviews to inform others exploring potential medical treatments. They have been used against environmentalists fighting to protect endangered species and ecosystems from corporate greed. They have been used against tenants and have the temerity to request repairs are made in good time and then complaints are taken seriously. In fact, there are few areas of society untouched by this form of legalised bullying. And so we have to ask, who has been threatened into silence, so much as that they are too fearful to speak to a journalist. SLAPPs remove information from the public domain. Every story, social media post, blog report or published piece of work removed by a target who cannot afford to mount a defence, cannot afford to turn away from their work to prepare going to court, and cannot afford to endure the complexity and unpredictability of the British justice system, is something that leaves us all worse off. However, next month the government has an opportunity to readdress the balance to ensure that those targeted by legal bullies have the same rights to justice as those wealthy enough to afford the legal costs. If the King's Speech includes a bill that will establish universal, clear and meaningful anti-slap protections, we no legislative time will be put aside for parliamentarians to take an important step for the right of everyone to speak out. Our opinion. The government has a duty to protect people from legal bullying. The first step should be a clear commitment to stamping out slaps in the King's Speech. We work to inform our local community, however it's too easy for the wealthy and powerful to try and silence our reporting. We became journalists to write about what is important to you, not to appear in court. Local journalists in the lifeblood of democracy, and it must be protected from abusive legal threats aimed at silencing our reporting. It is too easy for the wealthy and powerful to try to silence us and our industry's colleagues. This needs to change. We call out the government to commit to stamping out slaps. Children's homes built on green space after changes to planned approved. Four new children's homes will be built in the Black Country after changes were approved. The homes will be built on green space off Holloway Bank, West Bromwich, and will be used as residential homes for up to 8 vulnerable children after plans were approved by Sandwell Council. The application by Surinder Burry from developer Beaver Homes said revised new plans would provide a safe, supervised and family-like environment for vulnerable children. Approving the application, council planners said that although it appreciated that local residents have used the land for their own enjoyment over the years, it noted that this had been allowed by the landowner, who would have restricted access to this privately owned site, for example by fencing off the site. Therefore, the informal historical use of the site should not preclude the site coming forward for development. The local authority's planning committee gave the green light to 4 3-bedroom houses on the patch of land 2 years ago, despite objections from neighbours in Francis Ward Close, who were worried that they would lose a valuable piece of green space that was regularly used by dog walkers and children. Neighbours also said that they would lose their privacy and the new homes would block sunlight. In 2024, the Council Highways Department said that the risk of new homes causing more accidents were low, despite warnings the busy route was already an accident black spot. Revised plans suggest a new entrance off Holloway Bank. Tina Jennings spoke on behalf of her mother at the planning meeting, saying that the proposed new entrance would add to problems in Holloway Bank. The road is really busy road with HGVs thundering up and down it all day, she said. There have been numerous incidents, including fatalities, and there was one a few months ago when someone hit the wall. It's difficult to turn out of that road onto the main road, as it is so with another access road, it's going to be impossible. I think it was described in the application as unloved, unused, and it's in a bad state. It's not unloved, it's not unused, and it's not in a bad state. It's a nice green space for the community. Sandwell Council had recommended approval in 2024, saying that despite residents enjoying the use of the green space, it was actually private land, and there was little that they could do to protect it.
Hi, this is Debbie with some articles from the Express and Star from the 16th of April. Confusion over Albion hearing on PSR breach. Albion face uncertainty over the timing of any EFL hearing over their alleged PSR charge, amid reports interest on loans dating back to the Guo Chan Lai era could be the cause. This week's development of an alleged profit and sustainability breach for 2024 to 2025 has sparked fears of a points deduction, further endangering their second-tier status. It has since been claimed the dispute between Albion and the EFL's club financial reporting unit is related to interest payments on loans taken to help the club survive the lie era, pending their takeover. The club were hit by a compliance report from the CFRU, though the specific date that this was issued remains unclear. Albion had 14 days from the issue date to respond, but there is uncertainty over the time frame thereafter. Rules state a hearing must take place within 28 days of the initial report. If Albion are found guilty, EFL rules say sanctions must come the season after the breach, in this case meaning sanctions must apply this season. However, there is confusion over when the current championship season actually ends, whether it is the playoff final on May the 23rd, the EFL AGM, usually in early June, or the fixture release day on June the 25th. NHS patients suffering doom loop on tests. People complain of confusion and having to chase scan results, by Jane Kirby. This article is accompanied by a colour photograph of a hospital ward showing two nurses, chap in a face mask and two ladies leaning over a desk doing admin. And the caption reads, "Today's survey reveals that for 41% of patients, bad experiences make them less likely to seek care in future." Patients are being forced to chase NHS test results and are receiving appointment reminders after the date has passed, according to a report, which found people trapped in an admin doom loop. The study from the King's Fund, Health Watch and National Voices found two-thirds of people have experienced at least one NHS admin problem in the past year. These include not being kept informed about waiting times, having to chase results, not being told who to contact while waiting for care, and being given incorrect information. Key issues in the report include 33% of patients were not kept updated about how long they would have to wait for care or treatment. 32% have had to chase test or scan results. 24% did not know who to contact while waiting for care. 23% had received an appointment letter or text after the date of the appointment, a 3 percentage point increase since 2024. 18% tried to contact the NHS to change or cancel an existing appointment but were not able to. 15% were told or sent information they could not understand. 15% were told or sent the wrong appointment date or time. For 41% of patients, such experiences make them less likely to seek care in the future. The report, based on responses from 1,908 adults in December, said, "The results overall make for difficult reading. Not only has there been little change in people's experience of NHS admin since our previous polling in 2024, but general perceptions of NHS admin and communications have actually got worse. Less than half of those polled think the NHS is good at communicating with patients about things like appointments and test results, and around a third think it's poor at the various aspects of communications with patients. When we ask people how good or poor the NHS is at communicating with patients about things like appointments and test results, over 2 in 5, 43%, said it was good, while nearly 1 in 3, 30%, said it was poor. This is worse than in 2024, when over 1 in 2, 52%, said it was good, and 1 in 4, 25%, said it was poor. The study found responses to particular aspects of admin have got worse. For example, in 2025, 32% of people said the NHS is good at ensuring patients have someone to contact about ongoing care, down from 43% in 2024, while just over 34% said it is poor, compared with 28% in 2024. People with long-term health conditions were more likely to say the NHS is poor, while carers and those on lower incomes were also more likely to say the same. Overall, 60% of people who had experienced admin issues said it made them think NHS money is being wasted. More than half also felt their time was being wasted, 57%, and the same proportion thought staff time was being wasted. Patients described issues such as taking time off work only to discover on arrival their appointment had been cancelled without warning, and losing income as they juggled rescheduled appointments. Others receive communication about cancer surgery before receiving biopsy results or a diagnosis, while some describe the stress of managing their care across phone calls, text messages and multiple apps. Dan Wellings, Senior Fellow at the King's Fund and co-author of the report, said, "These results show that for many people, navigating the NHS still too often feels like being set adrift without a compass. 2/3 of patients experiencing problems with NHS administration is not a minor systems issue. It is a day-to-day reality for millions of people. People are left chasing basic information and struggling to manage the care they need at moments when they are already anxious about their own health or that of someone they love, and that is completely unacceptable in a 21st century health system." Man is charged over shop thefts. A man was due to appear at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court, charged with over a dozen shop theft offences in the Sandwell area. Mohammed Safiyan Khan was arrested over the weekend in Oldbury. And following inquiries by West Midlands Police's Sandwell Retail Crime Team, the 31-year-old was charged with 17 shop theft offences and assault and possession of a knife. He was remanded in custody to appear before Wolverhampton Magistrates Court yesterday. A West Midlands Police spokesperson said yesterday, "Mohammed Safiyan Khan was arrested over the weekend in Oldbury, and following inquiries, he has now been charged with 17 shop theft offences, assault and possession of a knife. He was remanded into custody to appear before a Wolverhampton Magistrates Court." Pensioner dealt drugs on streets by Paul Jenkins. A pensioner was among two street drug dealers who were told by a judge, "You should have known better." The men have been sentenced for their part in a significant drug dealing operation in Oldbury and Smethwick. Mark Rogers and Dilbag Dillon, 42, were told by Judge Simon Ward they were not young men. Rogers arrived at Wolverhampton Crown Court with a walking stick, which he used to help him into the dock. The pair were spotted by police in Seymour Road, Oldbury, in January in a Hyundai car. When officers approached, they found three mobile phones in the car and a notebook, which Dillon tried to throw away. When confiscated, they found a tick list in Punjabi, listing potential drug deals. They also found plastic bags containing 31 wraps of crack cocaine and heroin, as well as £1,229 in cash. Dillon stood to be sentenced on a separate charge of possession with intent to supply Class A drugs after an incident in West Smethwick Park in May, which involved another person. He was said by Judge Ward to be directing the operation, but that Rogers was far more than a driver, courier or gopher. Judge Ward said, "You are not young men and you should know better. All the evidence in this case, including the amount of products you were found to have on you, the evidence of deals and of money going into your accounts, suggests you were typical street dealers." Rogers was told, despite previous convictions related to drugs, a jail sentence would be tough on him, given his age and physical and mental condition. He was given a suspended sentence. For two counts of possession with intent to supply in two separate incidents, Dillon, of no fixed abode, was jailed for 3 years to run consecutively, meaning he was jailed for a total of 6 years. Man arrested after raw meat dumped near town Gurdwara. A man, aged in his 40s, has been arrested after a bag of raw meat was dumped near the entrance to the Guru Nanak Gurdwara in West Bromwich. The raw meat was left outside the Gurdwara in Victoria Street at around 11:30 a.m. on Wednesday, April the 8th. Police launched an investigation immediately and a man was arrested a short time later on suspicion of a racially or religiously aggravated public order offence. He has since been bailed as police continue their investigation. A force spokesperson said, "We launched an immediate investigation and a man aged in his 40s was arrested a short time later on suspicion of a racially or religiously aggravated public order offence. He has since been bailed as we work to establish the full circumstances. Our inquiries are ongoing and anyone with information is asked to contact us via live chat on our website or by calling 101 and quoting 20/206336/26.
This is Lauren with some stories from the Express and Star from the 17th of April. Golf club fears for future as yobs churn up greens. written by Adam Smith. A black country golf club with more than 120 years of history is in danger of being lost forever after being targeted by vandals on motorbikes. The publicly owned Dartmouth Golf Club at the Vale in West Bromwich is unable to begin the start of its summer season or charge players for a round of golf and has been forced to make members putt on makeshift greens. Golf club staff and members were left heartbroken when they saw months of hard work ruined overnight when bikers went berserk on the course, including churning up the grass on the greens. The first attack was in February, followed by a repeat in March, and an example of wanton vandalism on Wednesday night, which has and will cost tens of thousands of pounds to repair. To add insult to injury, the OBS even took the time to cut the razor wire protecting the course and wrapped it around a flagpole on one of the greens they ruined. Club vice-captain Dan Elwell said, "This is just mindless vandalism. They were doing donuts on the greens, there are divots and six-inch groves. Over the last 3 months, we have been subject to 3 acts of vandalism." He added, "The latest occurred on last Wednesday evening. We have contacted the police on each occasion, who have just given us a crime reference number for each occurrence, but got no actual help in preventing recurrence. The fact they wrapped razor wire around the flag feels like they are mocking us." The club has contacted West Bromwich MP Sarah Coombs about the vandalism, and Sandwell Council Antisocial Behaviour Unit are also investigating the attacks. Mr Elwell added, "The land that the course sits on is owned by Sandwell Council. In our opinion, the responsibility for security of the site sits with Sandwell Council, but as of yet, we've not had any joy in securing some sort of permanent measure to stop vandals entering the course. The costs each time the greens need to be repaired are into the tens of thousands, and we can take months to fully recover. We are losing money because we cannot charge golfers to use the course as it is at the moment, and our season starts soon. The club has created makeshift greens with holes so players can complete the hole by putting their balls. The Lewisham restaurant is on the golf club, and the management have the responsibility of maintaining the course, and each attack costs the owners money. Today, Miss Coombs MP, senior officers from Sandor Council Antisocial Behaviour Team representatives and West Midlands Police are meeting at the golf club to discuss preventing criminal damage at the property. Mr Elwell said, "We are hoping to get public support for permanent structures to be installed to prevent access to the course, because we cannot go on like this." Alongside this article is a picture of the golf green. It is just green as far as you can see, and in the centre of the photo is a hole for the golf ball with a yellow flag coming out of it. Surrounding the hole are multiple rings of tyre marks where you can see the motorbikes have gone round, some running so deep the grass has been removed and you see the sand underneath. It's captioned, "Tyre marks can be clearly seen on the greens on the course." Woman killed in attack by dogs, written by Dan Stacey. A woman in her 70s has died after being attacked by 2 dogs at a home in the Black Country. West Midlands Police were called to Willis Pearson Avenue, Bilston, after reports of a woman in her 70s being seriously injured by the dogs. Despite the best efforts of emergency services, the woman died at the scene. Due to the continued aggression of both dogs when emergency services arrived, police said the animals were destroyed. A 37-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of being in charge of a dog dangerously out of control and causing injury resulting in death. He was taken to hospital after also receiving injuries to his hand. Further inquiries are being carried out into the 2 dogs, which are not believed to be a banned breed. A police cordon remained in place last night following the attack at around 11:30 p.m. on Wednesday. Police said an investigation was in its early stages. An ambulance service spokesman said, "We were called at 11:31 p.m. to reports of a dog attack on Willis Pearson Avenue in Bilston. We found 2 patients. Firstly, an elderly woman. She was confirmed deceased at the scene. Secondly, a man. He received treatment at the scene before being conveyed to New Cross Hospital. It follows two dog attacks last week, including one which resulted in the death of a baby. A three-month-old girl died as a result of a dog bite in Redcar. Police were also called to a property in the Dormanstown area on April 9th, and armed officers ended up shooting a dog in the street. And on April 10th, 19-year-old Jamie Lee Biscoe was found with serious injuries by emergency services after a dog attack in Essex. Alongside this article is a picture of the scene where the woman sadly passed away. There are three houses, all attached to one another in what seems to be an avenue. They are made of brick with windows. Each have fences round a front lawn of grass, and in front of one of them are many police officers stood around and a police van. It's captioned, "Police at the scene where a woman died on Willis Pearson Avenue." This is a comment from the column comment section. The vaccination programme that helped bring the COVID pandemic to an end is one of the few success stories that came out of that traumatic time. Ironically, despite its overwhelmingly effectiveness in protecting millions from serious illnesses, it also helped turn many people off protective jabs. There were a small minority of tragic deaths that came from side effects linked to vaccination. That and the explosion of online urban myths has made many people now too scared to come forward for vaccines. The latest release from the COVID pandemic inquiry deals with some of the issues coming from the vaccination programme. In her report, inquiry chairwoman Baroness Heather Hallett praised the fact that the UK was a world leader in biomedical sciences, which set it in good stead for developing and rolling out vaccines at scale. However, she said the government must now act urgently to reform the scheme for payments to the small minority of people damaged by the vaccines, almost doubling maximum payouts to at least £200,000 for an upper limit of £120,000 that it is at present. That is the right thing to do. It is hard to believe the amount has not risen with inflation over the years, and those impacted deserve to be supported. Her report also highlights the danger from vaccine hesitancy, with a lower uptake in poorer communities and among some ethnic minority groups. Lady Hallett calls for action in all four nations to build trust within communities with lower vaccine uptake and to make vaccines more accessible. As she points out, the clock is ticking until the next pandemic hits us, and we must ensure we are better prepared next time round.
Hello, this is Sobjit with your news from the Express and Star, Saturday, 18 April. Chance to book spring COVID jab. Millions of older and vulnerable people can now book their spring COVID-19 jabs. Officials stressed that previous immunity against the virus can wane over time and urged those eligible to book an appointment. Tens of thousands of slots a day are now available at GP practices and community pharmacies across England. People aged 75 and over are eligible for the jab, along with older people in care homes and those with weakened immune systems. NHS England said these patients will be invited to come forward, but they do not need to wait to book an appointment. Slots can be secured using the NHS app or by going online, visiting a walk-in site or calling 119. COVID-19 spreads year-round and can be life-threatening to elderly or vulnerable people. Visit the NHS website, use the NHS app, or call 119 to make an appointment. Eight youths plead not guilty to murder of 18-year-old man. Eight youths have pleaded not guilty to murdering 18-year-old Shezhan Afzal in the grounds of a Smedic mosque as the police investigation continues. At Wolverhampton Crown Court yesterday, nine youths appeared before Judge Michael Chambers KC, accused of his murder. Shezhan was stabbed near the Oldbury Road Jamia Masjid on February 20 following Ramadan prayers. Eight of the defendants entered a not guilty plea to murder. Two of them, both aged 17, also pleaded not guilty to possession of a knife on the same date. A ninth youth was not required to enter a plea at this stage. All spoke to confirm their names at the hearing. Barrister Mr. Michael Duck, KC, prosecuting, said, "We are currently looking at a nine-handed trial. There is a potential for two further defendants as the police investigation is ongoing." Judge Chambers said the trial will be held at Leicester Crown Court sitting at Loughborough in October before a High Court judge due to the number of young defendants involved in the case. Addressing the youths, who cannot be publicly named, he said, "If you fail to attend your trial, you run the risk of it proceeding in your absence, which may mean that you are not represented. In the meantime, you must remain in custody." The trial is expected to last up to 10 weeks. Police arrest two more men after shooting. Police have arrested two men as part of an investigation into a shooting in Smethwick last month. The men, aged 23 and 20, were arrested in the Cradley Heath area on Thursday. The 23-year-old has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder, while the 20-year-old has been arrested on suspicion of possession of Class A drugs with intent. It follows the incident which happened in Bearwood Road, Smethwick, on March 11, when a man was shot in the leg. Another man, aged 21, has been charged with attempted murder, possession of a firearm with intent to endanger life, possession of two zombie knives in a private place, theft, fraud and motoring offences. A West Midlands police spokesperson said, "We were called to Bearwood Road, Smethwick at around 1:30 a.m. on 11 March after the 19-year-old victim was shot in the leg. The victim has also been arrested on suspicion of violent disorder and has been released on police bail and released from hospital. Another man, aged 21, has previously been charged with attempted murder and remanded in custody. Our investigation continues and anyone who has any information or witnessed the incident is asked to contact us." Weather shocks have sent lamb prices soaring. Households that eat lamb regularly have seen £168 added to the cost over the past 3 years due to climate change, according to a report. Experienced by the UK for the past 4 years, including droughts, extreme heat and heavy rainfall, have pushed prices for a typical 2 kg leg of lamb up by between 21% each time, according to the Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit think tank. Chris Giacarini, Land, Food and Farming Analyst at the unit, said, "The cost of climate change is hitting home. Lamb prices are through the roof after droughts, extreme heat and heavy rainfall have hit farmers' costs of production, weakening grass growth and not allowing their depleted hay stores they depend on time to recover, with beef and dairy prices up after similar extreme weather impacts on production. It is now clear that climate change now poses a major and worsening challenge for livestock farmers. As the current oil price shock threatens to bring yet another round of food price inflation, without faster progress towards net zero to bring balance back to our climate, as well as more investment in the resilience of our farmers, the affordability of food is worryingly exposed to these worsening shocks." The analysis by Zero Carbon Analytics for the unit used Met Office data to model the impact of the drought and extreme heat in 2022. the record-breaking rainfall between October 2023 and March 2024, and the hottest spring and summer on record in the UK last year. It combined this with figures from the Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board to model the impact of extreme weather events on farm gate prices. Jack Cockburn, a sheep farmer from Ceredigion in Wales, said, "Here in West Wales, extreme weather is our biggest challenge. We've had two very wet winters in a row, which has meant poor grass growth due to waterlogged soils and low light levels with the very cloudy conditions. This has meant lambs going to the abattoir at lighter weights and less meat per animal. The problems are different for farmers across the country. Here in Wales, we're suffering from wet weather, whereas in other parts of the UK, long, hot, dry spells in summer are the biggest issue. To mitigate this, we now keep fewer sheep, as this makes it easier to maintain good quality pasture by adopting nature-friendly grazing practices and rotating them around. British consumption of lamb has declined. In 1980, average household consumption was 128 grams per person per week. By 2024, this has dropped to 23 grams per person per week. Five things we love this week. Number one, a coin featuring a tiger, a snail, and a dove have been launched to celebrate 200 years of the Zoological Society of London, known as ZSL. The £2 coin carries the Edge inscription, "Restoring Wildlife Together," and it was created by the Royal Mint in collaboration with ZSL. A giant wooden replica of the coin measuring 2 metres, that's 6.5 feet, in size was given to the Conservation Zoo's Sumatran Tigers for their roar of approval. The replica coin formed part of activities which stimulate an animal's natural instincts. For tigers, this includes stalking and hunting. Each is depicted with fine detail, including the texture of the tiger's fur and the delicate feathers of the dove. Number two, Brazil's first ever official tartan has been revealed as the country celebrates its links with Scotland ahead of the World Cup fixture between the two nations. The Spirit of Brazil tartan was designed by 6-year-old Indy Menzies from Largs Primary School, who has a surprising family link to the South American country. She is a distant relative of Charles Miller, the Scot who is considered the father of Brazilian football after he introduced the sport to the country in the early 20th century. Scotland's national team will play Brazil in the group stage of the World Cup on June 24. The fixture is reminiscent of the last time Scotland qualified for the tournament in 1998. Number three, the Artemis II lunar mission has sent sales of space-related toys soaring in the UK, retailers have reported. Argos said it had experienced a spike in demand for space-themed toys, including Lego, following the first manned moon mission in more than 50 years, as customers sought to recreate the historic journey at home. Sales of the Lego Technic NASA Artemis Space Launch System rocket were up 320% week on week at Argos. The retailer said the sales figures pointed to a renewed national curiosity with space and a growing appetite for NASA-inspired builds. The trend has also shown up in searches, with argos.co.uk data showing surging interest across space-related terms, including Lego Artemis, up 1,050%, Lego Rocket, up 390%, Artemis up 1,300%, and Space Rocket up 500%. Number 4. Outfits worn by the Spice Girls, including Mel B's leopard print catsuit, are to go on display at a Cool Britannia exhibition celebrating the wildest year of the 1990s. Liam Gallagher's tambourine, Jerry Halliwell's Union Flag platform boots, and a Brit Award are among the items featuring in the free exhibition at the Barbican Music Library in central London. Curated by former editor of the Sun newspaper, Dominic Mohan, the show will capture that magical period when pop, rock, football, art, dance culture, food, the media and politics fuse together spectacularly. It celebrates the year of 1996, when the Spice Girls rose to fame and scored 3 number ones, Oasis performed their famous Nebworth gig, and the comedy drama Trainspotting hit cinemas and became a cultural phenomenon. Number 5. A statue of Bridget Jones will remain a permanent fixture on a trail of Britain's best-loved characters in central London. The announcement comes as the first film in the franchise of the same name celebrates its 25th anniversary. The figure was unveiled at Leicester Square's Scenes in the Square trail in November last year, with actress Renee Zellweger saying at the time that her role as the protagonist had been a pretty big blessing. The trail features statues of movie characters such as Harry Potter, Batman, Paddington, and Mary Poppins in the Capitol's Film Centre. The first adaptation, Bridget Jones's Diary, was released in April 2001 and became a global hit, earning Zellweger an Oscar nomination.
Albion Match Report. Josh Madger and Daryl DK scored as West Bromwich Albion beat Preston North End to extend their unbeaten run to 8 games and climb 5 points clear of the Championship relegation zone. Interim boss James Morrison has transformed the Baggies, who have taken 12 points during their undefeated run, to put some daylight between themselves and the bottom three. Madger opened the scoring before DK sealed the win with his first goal since the final day of last season. The defeat at Deepdale ended Preston's 4-game unbeaten run, and Paul Heckingbottom's side lost skipper Ben Whiteman early on to injury. West Brom fans, meanwhile, made their unhappiness clear towards the English Football League over a potential points deduction for an alleged breach of profit and sustainability rules. But they also chanted Morrison's name. They have seen their side register 4 clean sheets in the past 5 games at this critical point of the season, helping Albion move towards safety. Madger scored in the 11th minute with his 3rd goal in 6 games and 6th of the season. Isaac Price weaved his way upfield and fed Orn Hegbo, who teed up Madger to score into the bottom right corner from 10 yards. West Brom could have had more, and Madger was just an inch away from connecting with Price's pass before the Nigerian's lob past stranded Preston goalkeeper Daniel Iverson went just wide of the far post. Despite being second best, Preston might have levelled when on loan Tottenham midfielder Alfie Devine headed wide from Andrew Hughes's cross. Preston improved after the break and goalkeeper Max O'Leary touched a Brad Potts header over at his back post from Jordan Thompson's cross. Back came the Baggies, and Callum Stiles, Price and Madger threatened before DK wrapped up the victory in the 77th minute when he hammered the ball into the roof of the net from Jason Bulumbi's cutback. Preston produced a rousing finale, and Lewis Dobbin twice went close either side of O'Leary touching a Thierry small corner onto his crossbar. James Morrison said, "It was magical, really. The performance that we gave was a typical away performance, and a clean sheet and two goals from our strikers tops it off, really. It was a performance where we were under pressure, but I didn't feel we played with that pressure. I'm really pleased for them, all the hard work they have given us." Then the scenes at the end with the fans, it was a good afternoon's work. Everyone was working for each other. You could see when they had the ball, we had twos and threes around them. We were winning tackles and duels. I'm so very pleased with everyone because it was a good performance. On moving 5 points from the relegation zone, you never know with this league what it can come up with, what it can give you, because it's full of surprises. We'll enjoy the moment and then we're back tomorrow. The players have got to work. We can't get away from the end goal.
Hello, it's Jenny. It's nice to be back reading for you after the Easter break. Hope everybody's okay. The following articles are from the Express and Star newspaper, Monday the 20th of April. Food bank makes a late bid to reopen doomed leisure centre. Trustees make offer to run food bank alongside renowned weightlifting club. An article by Paul Jenkins. A late bid has been made to save a doomed Sandwell leisure centre, which has hosted its renowned weightlifting club for over 50 years. Trustees of United Hands Food Bank, which runs at Smethwick Cricket Club next to Harry Mitchell Leisure Centre, want to maintain the centre at no cost to Sandwell Council. The centre, named after Harry Mitchell of Smethwick-based brewery dynasty M&B, hosted Worley Weightlifting Club for over 50 years until its closure in October last year. The renowned club has trained British and Commonwealth champions. The centre is currently set for demolition after councillors approved the move last month. Sandwell Council said the leisure centre was the oldest and poorest facility in the borough and would need at least £1.5 million to repair it. But Jaz Singh Takar, a trustee of the United Hands Food Bank, which meets every Monday, said they and a consortium of business people in the borough wanted to reopen the centre and continue the operations of the weightlifting club. He said, "Our plan would be to operate the centre at no cost to the council, taking on responsibility for security and maintenance, bills, insurance and health and safety. It would see the food bank, which is a successful community asset, run alongside the weightlifting club, which would open 7 days a week. The club has produced many national and international champions, including Gyan Singh Chima, who is a Commonwealth champion and British champion, who continues to train young students, helping them achieve British Championship awards. The centre acts as a legacy to the Mitchell family, who donated the land in 1899 to build it. The facilities are ideal for our health programmes, and our community members greatly value having access to local amenities. We believe this proposal, which has been fully thought out and costed, offers a practical solution that preserves a valuable community resource, protects a historical building, and continues the important work that we do for local residents. A Sandwell Council spokesperson said, "Following an options appraisal, a recommendation was approved by Cabinet. Demolish the vacant centre, to be followed by the proposed redevelopment of the site for new council housing, to help provide much needed new homes for council residents on the council's waiting list. The planning brief, developed for the site in line with our local plan, proposes a new, healthy neighbourhood and community of apartments and townhouses in keeping with the character of the area. The closure of the Harry Mitchell Leisure Centre forms part of a wider programme of upgrades to the indoor sports and leisure provision in the south of Sandwell, following the opening of the state-of-the-art Sandwell Aquatic Centre in July 2023, which is less than a 15-minute walk from this location. The council acknowledges the offer from the food bank, and while the Harry Mitchell site has been determined as not suitable for this use, we will continue to work with them to look for alternative options. Toy recreates Paddington Royal Tea Party, an article by Casey Cooper Fisk, entertainment reporter. Paddington's Platinum Jubilee Tea Party with the late Queen Elizabeth II has been recreated with toys to celebrate the launch of a new Steiff Bear to mark what would have been her 100th birthday on April the 21st. The scene resembles the time the late Queen appeared in a comedy sketch with a digitally animated Paddington to mark the milestone in 2022, in which she revealed she kept marmalade sandwiches, Paddington's favourite treat, in her handbag. The stunt, which took place at Newby Hall, saw a soft toy of Paddington positioned having tea with a special edition Queen Elizabeth II Steiff teddy bear, which wears one of the late Queen's most recognisable outfits, a lime green coat with a matching hat, pearl necklace and a handbag. Ian Munro, Steiff's Director of International Sales, said, "We're celebrating the fact that 100 years ago, on the 21st of April 1926, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II was born. The bears will be limited to just 4,996. A nod to the late Queen living to 96 years old, and are priced at £289 each. When the late Queen died in 2022, mourners left Paddington cuddly toys and marmalade sandwiches outside Buckingham Palace as a tribute." Red flags that identify fake weight loss jabs. Criminals are exploiting the boom with counterfeit medicines. An article by Camilla Foster, health correspondent. Fake weight loss injections may seem cheaper, but unregulated medicine can be very dangerous, with criminals taking advantage of growing demand. As the popularity of weight loss jabs shows no sign of abating, a new poll has found that criminals are exploiting this trend by impersonating online pharmacies to sell counterfeit injections. A survey of 100 online pharmacies by the National Pharmacy Association, the NPA, which represents around 6,000 pharmacies across Britain, found that 1 in 10 pharmacies reported that their online presence was cloned by illicit sellers over the past year. NPA board member Sahar Shahid, obesity specialist pharmacist and founder of 24 Hour Pharmacy, was among those whose businesses were cloned. She has shared key red flags of fake or unregulated weight loss jabs to watch out for. Prices too good to be true. Prices will differ slightly from one provider to the next, but on average, weight loss medication usually starts from around £130 to £300, says Shahid. So, if you're being offered a price that's far below the market range and seems too good to be true, be cautious, as it's likely that the medication is not genuine. No consultation. If a provider doesn't undertake a thorough video or in-person consultation before prescribing weight loss medication, that's a clear red flag. All regulated providers are responsible for having a two-way dialogue with patients and should undertake a full medical history check, say Shahid. Request to transfer money. If someone's asking you to do a bank transfer or pay via PayPal or via Bitcoin, that's usually a red flag, says Shahid. All regulated online pharmacies will make you pay with your card through their website, through a regulated payment gateway, and won't take payments over the phone or messaging on social media. All transactions should be done through a registered website so the patient is protected. Incorrect, misspelled or slightly altered domain names. These criminals have become very sophisticated and will replicate a legitimate website very well, so sometimes it's very hard for patients to spot a fake website upon first glance, says Shahid. Every regulated registered pharmacy has to be registered with the General Pharmaceutical Council and should be displaying their registration number, which then links through to the GPHC register. When you click onto the register, check under more details to see what the exact web domain name is for that registered license. because these unregulated or illegal websites often add a letter or word different to the real domain name. A lack of communication. A lot of these criminal businesses often don't speak to patients on the phone, so that is another red flag to look out for, says Shahid. You want to know who is providing your medication. You should be able to speak to somebody on the phone. A cloudy liquid. Usually with the injections, the liquid should be clear, says Shahid. So if the liquid is not clear, that is a red flag and I would advise patients not to use it. Unsealed packaging. The packaging should always come sealed. So if that seal is broken, I would be worried because the medication inside might have been tampered with, says Shahid. What are the dangers? All regulated and licensed medications have gone through vigorous clinical trials, so we understand what dose to give and what the potential side effects are and how to use it, says Shahid. However, with anything that's fake, unregulated or hasn't been approved yet, you don't know what you're putting into your body. Therefore, anyone who is using something that is unregulated or fake will put themselves at risk of side effects and becoming really unwell. Trams ready to run on new line. Trams will run to Dudley for the first time in 96 years when testing commences on the new £649 million West Midlands Metro line in June. A spokesman for Transport for West Midlands said construction teams had now left the 6 mile route and that inspection and testing work had already begun. The first trams are expected to run in June, ahead of a much-delayed opening of August the 28th. The 6 mile route, which will largely follow the course of the former railway line, is the biggest extension to the West Midland tram network since the original Wolverhampton to Birmingham line opened in May 1999. It will link up with the original tram line at a new junction in Wensbury, passing through Dudleyport Railway Station and Tipton before terminating just past Flood Street. It will eventually continue to Merrihill Shopping Centre. The last trams into Dudley, including a service from Wensbury, ran on March 30th before they were replaced with the Midland Red bus route. Work started on the line, which was originally to have run to Briley Hill Town Centre in February 2020, with a scheme due to have been completed in its entirety by the end of 2023. Delays caused by the coronavirus lockdown saw the completion date rescheduled for summer 2024. But in July that year, the Express and Star revealed that costs had ballooned to £550 million. Prompting the leaders of the West Midlands Combined Authority to mothball the Dudley to Briley Hill stretch until further funding could be found. In June 2023, it was revealed the total cost of the scheme had risen to £649 million, taking it 45% over budget, although the decision to scrap the northern leg of HS2 released funding to eventually extend the line as far as Merrihill Shopping Centre. In July 2024, it was announced that the opening of the Wensbury to Dudley line would be put back to autumn 2025. At the start of this year, an opening date of August the 28th was confirmed.
Welcome back to the Express and Star pub quiz. Question 1. Julian Casablancas fronts which band that has announced their first UK gigs in 3 years, including a performance at the London's O2 later this year? Question 2. The government has announced funding to explore the reintroduction of what bird to England? Sport. Question 3. Who will captain England in the Women's Six Nations? Question 4. Swimmer Adam Peaty has won how many Olympic gold medals? Remember when? Question 5. Winston Churchill retired as Prime Minister. Stirling Moss won his first Grand Prix. Disneyland opened at Attenheim, California. Cardiff became the capital of Wales. But what was the year? Question 6. The magazine Punch closed after 151 years. Pakistan won the World Cup in cricket. Betty Boothroyd became the first female speaker of the House of Commons. And Princess Diana visited the Taj Mahal alone. But what was the year? Who am I? Question 7. A singer, I was born in Paris in 1933. I once compared the Miss World contest in London in the 1970s. I became a professional jazz guitarist by the age of 16 and later established myself as a popular crooner with songs such as Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Question 8. An entrepreneur, I was born in Poland in 1872. In 1894, I moved to Australia to live with extended family and began to experiment with beauty products. I opened my first beauty salon in Melbourne in 1902, and then salons in London, Paris, and New York. My cosmetic range, named after myself, made me one of the world's richest women. My brand was later acquired by Colgate-Palmolive and is now owned by L'Oreal. Local knowledge. Question 9. In 1912, Birmingham's Acme factory supplied 30 nickel-plated Thunderers to the Titanic. In 1997, they produced 50 replicas for the blockbuster film, including the one Kate Winslet famously uses in the final scenes. But what exactly is a Thunderer? And question 10. In May 2026, the Wolverhampton Civic Hall will host a Hollywood legend and his jazz band, the Mildred Snitzer Orchestra. Known for his roles in Wicked and Jurassic Park, which actor famously joked that this tour to Wolverhampton City will complete my life? How's your quiz knowledge? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers to this week's quiz. Question 1. Julian Casablancas fronts which band that has announced their first UK gigs in 3 years, including a performance at the London's O2 later this year? The Strokes. Question 2. The government has announced funding to explore the reintroduction of what bird to England? The Golden Eagle. Sport. Question 3. Who will captain England in the Women's Six Nations? Megan Jones. Question 4. Swimmer Adam Peaty has won how many Olympic gold medals? 3 gold medals. That's 6 Olympic medals in total. Remember when? Question 5. Winston Churchill retired as Prime Minister. Stirling Moss won his first Grand Prix. Disneyland opened at Addenheim, California. Cardiff became the capital of Wales. But what was the year? 1955. Question 6. The magazine Punch closed after 151 years. Pakistan won the World Cup in cricket. Betty Boothroyd became the first female speaker of the House of Commons. And Princess Diana visited the Taj Mahal alone. But what was the year? 1992. Who am I? Question 7. a singer. I was born in Paris in 1933. I once compared the Miss World contest in London in the 1970s. I became a professional jazz guitarist by the age of 16 and later established myself as a popular crooner with songs such as Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Sasha Distel. Question 8. An entrepreneur, I was born in Poland in 1872. In 1894, I moved to Australia to live with extended family and began to experiment with beauty products. I opened my first beauty salon in Melbourne in 1902, and then salons in London, Paris, and New York. My cosmetic range, named after myself, made me one of the world's richest women. My brand was later acquired by Colgate-Palmolive and is now owned by L'Oreal. Helena Rubinstein. Local knowledge. Question 9. In 1912, Birmingham's Acme factory supplied 30 nickel-plated Thunderers to the Titanic. In 1997, they produced 50 replicas for the blockbuster film, including the one Kate Winslet famously uses in the final scenes. But what exactly is a Thunderer? It's a whistle. And question 10. In May 2026, the Wolverhampton Civic Hall will host a Hollywood legend and his jazz band, the Mildred Snitzer Orchestra. Known for his roles in Wicked and Jurassic Park, which actor famously joked that this tour to Wolverhampton City will complete my life? Jeff Goldblum. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye!
When you asked to receive recordings produced by the Sandwell Talking News, you gave your name and address so that we could send you our memory sticks or CDs. This information is stored in a secure database, and address labels are also stored in a secure location. Having left our premises, the address labels and postal wallets are then under the protection and care of Royal Mail. Your contact details are only used for sending you our memory sticks or CDs, and will never be forwarded to a third party. If you ask us to stop sending Sandwell Talking News to you, your contact details will be deleted from our database and your address labels will be permanently destroyed. We promise and assure you that we take data protection seriously and make every effort to meet the requirements of the Data Protection Act. If your circumstances do change, you move home, change your phone number, or wish to unsubscribe to the Sandwell Talking News, please call the office on 0121 525 4810 or email sandwelltn@gmail.com so that we can make the necessary changes.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, now for the audio described TV programmes for Saturday 18th of April to Friday 24th of April, compiled by Lisa and read by Diane. Beginning with BBC One on Saturday 18th, you can catch Homes Under the Hammer at 11:30, featuring properties in Leeds and Stoke. BBC Two has live coverage and commentary of the Women's Six Nations Rugby with Scotland versus England, kicking off at 1:30pm, followed by Wales versus France at 3:35pm. Raymond Blanc visits Hampton Court Palace at 12 noon on ITV One in Raymond Blanc's Royal Kitchen Gardens, and Channel 4 has morning comedy with three classic episodes of Frasier from 8:50am, followed by a triple bill of The Simpsons from 10:15. Casualty is BBC One's main evening offering at 8:45, when a desperate race is underway to ensure Faith makes it to the ED in time to give birth. Popular comedy Not Going Out lightens the mood at 9:35, starring Lee Mack. Then Match of the Day at 11:25 has commentary and analysis of today's football action. BBC Two is documentary focused with Elizabeth the Unseen Queen at 6:35 p.m. Another chance to see this programme from 2022 when it was made to celebrate the Platinum Jubilee. Followed by Inside Britain's National Parks at 7:50, featuring the wild and untamed beauty of Dartmoor. It's all about light entertainment on ITV1, starting with Britain's Got Talent at 7 p.m, introduced by Ant and Dec. Then at 8 p.m, Claire Balding is involved in dog-themed pranks in Celebrity Sabotage. This is followed by the game show The 1% Club at 9 p.m, hosted by Lee Mack, who is working hard this weekend. Channel 4 offers two new documentary series this evening. Explorer Lucy Shepherd sets off on a high-risk on-foot expedition across Tanzania at 7 p.m. in Secret Africa Into the Wild. This is followed by The World's Most Secret Hotels at 8, featuring a remote lodge in Bolivia and an Art Deco hotel in the Pyrenees. Then there's movie action at 9 p.m. in Plane, when a pilot and his passengers come under attack after an emergency landing on a remote island. Now for Sunday. Daytime options include Bargain Hunt at 12:30 on BBC One and Fletcher's Family Farm at 12:25 on ITV1, followed by Love Your Garden at 1:35, where Alan Titchmarsh turns an urban wasteland into a welcoming oasis. It's part three of Secret Garden on BBC One at 7. Sir David Attenborough tells the story of an idyllic Lake District garden where the owners do all that they can to encourage nature. At 9 p.m, there's Queen Elizabeth II, Her Story, Her Century, in what would have been Queen Elizabeth's 100th year. This documentary tells the story of her life alongside a century of change in Britain. Another documentary over on BBC Two at 7, Artemis to the Moon and Back. The crew of Artemis 2, engineers, technicians and mission directors, reveal what it takes to mount a moonshot in the 21st century. At 9 p.m, there's part three of Forensics, the Real CSI, followed by the acclaimed film The King's Speech at 10 p.m. Colin Firth stars in this Oscar-winning historical drama. ITV1 has the final part of Grace at 8 p.m. After a wealthy hotelier is killed in a car accident, Grace finds evidence of foul play. Over on Channel 4, there's a real nautical coastal feel, beginning with Sailing, the Shipping Forecast, with the Reverend Richard Coles at 3:35, followed by Our Tiny Islands at 4:40, this week visiting the Isles of Scilly. In Devon and Cornwall at 5:40, there's an attempt to save a coastal path, and at 6:40, there's the final episode of Inside the World's Most Luxurious Yachts. Alison Hammond hosts Your Song at 9 p.m, which this week comes from Edinburgh. And finally, you can catch up with the Armchair TV Critics in Gogglebox at 10. Turning now to this week's soap schedule. On Monday, it's EastEnders at 7:30 on BBC One and Emmerdale and Corrie on ITV One at 8 and 8:30 respectively. Tuesday has EastEnders at 7:30 and Emmerdale and Corrie at 8 and 8:30. Wednesday, it's EastEnders at 7:30 with Emmerdale and Corrie at 8 and 8:30. And Thursday is EastEnders at 7:30 with Emmerdale at 8 and 8:30. Moving on to Monday the 20th, BBC One offers the classic daytime double bill of Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15, followed by Bargain Hunt at 12:15, this week from Kent. Then Banjo Beal is asked to redesign the bar of the Isle of Mull Rugby Club in Designing the Hebrides at 2:30 p.m. A more serious tone in the evening schedule with What Happened at Chernobyl at 8:30. A documentary marking 40 years since the world's worst nuclear disaster. This is followed by a new crime drama at 9, Mint, written and directed by Charlotte Regan about the inner workings of a criminal family. Lighter fare on BBC Two at 6:30 p.m. when Michael Portillo visits Kagoshima in Great Japanese Railway Journeys. And at 9 p.m, it's the Great British Menu, when victorious chefs from the regional heats return to the kitchen for a special banquet in Liverpool. There's slim pickings on ITV1, unless you're a fan of Ant and Dec, in which case they're presenting I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here from South Africa at 9 p.m. Channel 4 have Chateau DIY at 5 p.m. and the final part of The Doghouse at 8 p.m. with Yorkshire Terrier Georgie seeking a forever home. The mood turns serious at 9 p.m. with part one of Suez, 24 hours that ended the British Empire, followed by Chernobyl, Days That Shocked the World at 10 p.m. Now on to Tuesday. BBC One has Shift the Thrift at 2 p.m, followed by more Designing the Hebrides with Banjo Beal at 2:30. Over on ITV One at 1 p.m, there's Celebrity Catchphrase featuring Tamsin Outhwaite and Phil Tufnell. Alan Carr returns to BBC One at 8 with Interior Design Masters, and there's a new series of MasterChef at 9 p.m. with new judges Grace Dent and Anna Haw. Classic late night movie fun is provided by Four Weddings and a Funeral at 10:40, starring Hugh Grant. Over on BBC Two, Michael Portillo meets a master swordsmith during his great Japanese railway journeys at 6:30 p.m. Then there's more Great British Menu at 7. The final part of Britain's Biggest Warship Goes to Sea is on at 8 p.m. There's more I'm a Celebrity at 9 on ITV One, whilst Channel 4 offers Our Welsh Chapel Dream at 8 p.m, with a potter and a designer continuing their renovation of a 163-year-old chapel. Then it's the concluding part of Suez, 24 hours that ended the British Empire, at 9 p.m. Gordon Ramsay pops up at 10 with Gordon Ramsay's Secret Service, in which our favourite sweary chef investigates a dodgy family-owned cafe where you probably wouldn't want to book a table. Now it's Wednesday, and BBC One has Bargain Hunt at 12:15, with Shift the Thrift at 2 and Designing the Hebrides at 2:30. On ITV One at 1, Rob Rinder is one of the celebrities playing Celebrity Catchphrase. The ever-popular Repair Shop is BBC One's peak time offering at 8 p.m, followed by Heat 2 of MasterChef at 9 p.m. On BBC Two, Michael Portillo is in Nagasaki at 6:30, and there's another Great British Menu at 7. At 8 p.m. in Digging for Britain, Alice Roberts investigates archaeological discoveries in the east of Britain. There's comedy at 10 when Hugh Bonneville stars in 2026. Ant and Dec are still in South Africa on ITV One at 9, whilst over on Channel 4 there's Gaping Ceiling Problems in Chateau DIY at 5. There are more building issues at 8 p.m. in Help, I Bought It at Auction with Sarah Beeney, when a storm batters an already crumbling Cornish mansion. At 9 p.m, it's Grayson Perry Has Seen the Future, when the artist continues his mission to understand how tech companies are shaping our world. Followed by more Gordon Ramsay at 10, when the chef's late night investigations unearth far scarier secrets than the ghosts that are said to haunt a restaurant's dining room. And now for Thursday. Catch Bargain Hunt at 12:15 on BBC One and Shift the Thrift at 2 p.m. More Celebrity Catchphrase at 1 p.m. on ITV One, with Jeremy Vine competing today. BBC One's evening highlights are Race Across the World at 8, where the leaderboard is tighter than ever on the fourth leg of the journey, and MasterChef at 9, when it's at the first quarter-final. Over on BBC Two, Michael Portillo reaches Arita on the Great British Railway Journey at 6:30, followed by the penultimate Great British Menu at 7. At 9, it's Saving Lives at Sea, this week following the search for a missing kayaker off the coast of Dorset. Gentler action at 10 p.m. in Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing. This week, Bob and Paul are fishing for trout in East Yorkshire. ITV One have an intriguing late-night documentary at 11 p.m, The Real Stonehouse, which chronicles the real-life story of Labour MP John Stonehouse, who disappeared from a Miami beach in 1974. Channel 4 has more Chateau DIY at 5, and at 8 p.m, Paul Merton has lots of fun driving a steam train on the French Riviera in Paul Merton Driving Amazing Trains. At 9 p.m, it's part 3 of Taskmaster, featuring Joel Dommett and Armando Iannucci, among other celebrities, followed by a double bill of comedy drama Big Mood at 10 p.m. And now it's Friday, 24th of April. BBC One's daytime offering is episode 8 of Father Brown at 2 p.m. This is followed by Make It at Market at 3:45, in which a woodworker and an embroiderer seek useful business advice. The evening schedule features Extraordinary Portraits with Bill Bailey at 7:30, followed by Cozy Cornish Crime in Beyond Paradise at 8 p.m. Then there's Irish comedy at 9:30 in The Young Offenders, when Connor and Jack hit the dating scene in Cork. What could possibly go wrong? On BBC Two at 6:30, Michael Portillo reaches Hiroshima, the midpoint of his great Japanese railway journey. Then at 7, Carol Klein and Dermot Gavin visit three glorious plots as they continue their hunt for Northern Ireland's best garden in Greatest Gardens. At 9 p.m, it's Great British Menu, Banquet Special, the final of this 29-episode cooking marathon. If you fancy a classic late-night movie, catch Don't Look Now at 11:05 p.m. This is a supernatural thriller starring Donald Sutherland and Julie Christie. Another grand final on ITV1 as Ant and Dec oversee the last four celebrities battling it out in South Africa. A more serious tone on Channel 4 with Unreported World, Children of the Crossfire at 7:30. Paul McNamara reports from the US city of Minneapolis. This is followed by a documentary about the rise of Greggs from its northeast roots. Greggs versus McDonald's, The Fast Feud, airs at 8 p.m. Some light relief at 9 from the Armchair Critics of Gogglebox. Then First Dates airs at 10. Will magician Clint conjure up a connection with cookie artist Sana from Finland? Probably not, but we wish him luck. And that concludes this week's audio described TV listings. Hopefully there is something here for everyone.
Now the radio listings for the 7 days beginning Saturday the 25th of April, compiled by Wendy and read by Gilly. Starting with Saturday 25th of April, today's drama is a radio adaptation of Alan Bennett's play The Madness of George III on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. In the series Archive on 4, The Last Dance Floor in Chernobyl tells the story of young couple Sergei and Irina, who fell in love at a nightclub in the Ukrainian city of Pripyat and were married on Saturday the 26th of April, the day after the nearby Chernobyl nuclear power plant exploded. It's on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. Moving on to Sunday, 26th of April. Today's edition of The Reunion brings together the team behind The Big Issue, the magazine set up to help homeless people. It's on Radio 4 at 10 a.m. The castaway in Desert Island Discs Revisited is Paralympian Dame Tanny Gray Thompson on Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. And Witness History looks at the project which reduced the Tower of Pisa's tilt by around 17 inches, securing it for a period of 200 to 300 years. And allowing it to reopen after more than a decade. Find out more on Radio 4 at 5 p.m. Words and Music has poetry, prose and music on the theme of William and includes extracts from William Wordsworth and Just William and Nat King Cole's version of Sweet William, among many others. It's on Radio 3 at 7:45 p.m. Turning now to those programmes which are broadcast at the same time every day from Monday to Friday. Joanna Lumley reads from her autobiography, No Room for Secrets, on Radio 4 Extra at 8:30 a.m, 1:30 p.m, and 7:30 p.m, Monday to Friday. It's followed by Go Set a Watchman, Harper Lee's follow-up to Kill a Mockingbird, which is read in 10 parts on Radio 4 Extra at 8:45 a.m, 1:45 p.m, and 7:45 p.m. every day this week and next. The book of the week is To the Edge of the World by Tila J. Matzio, the true story of Mary Ann Patton, a sea captain's wife, who was forced to take the helm during a perilous voyage around the coast of South America in 1856. That's on Radio 4 at 11:45 a.m. each day this week. In second-hand stories, James Peak buys pieces for Tony's antique stall in Enfield, but he is more interested in the stories of the people he meets than in the things they want to sell. That's on Radio 4 at 1:45 p.m. Monday to Friday. The composer of the week is Camille Saint-Saëns, 1835 to 1921, on Radio 3 at 4 p.m. each day. In the series The Essay, The Death and Life of Christopher Marlowe continues on Monday to Friday this week at 9:45 p.m. on Radio 3. The book at bedtime this week and next is The Prisoner, the sequel to Sally Carson's Crooked Cross, about a family living in 1930s Nazi Germany. It's on Radio 4 at 10:45 p.m. every day. Now, here are some individual programmes to listen to through the week, starting with Monday, 27th of April. The first of four parts of Educated Evans by Edgar Wallace and starring Roy Hudd is on Radio 4 Extra at 7 a.m, 12 noon and 6 p.m. In August 1990, the Iraqi army invaded Kuwait when Fatima al-Qadiri was 9 years old. Now an acclaimed Los Angeles-based musician, she explores what happens when warfare and music collide in The Sound of Bombs on Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. In Great Lives, we hear about Edith Garrod, 1872 to 1971, who shared her skills in martial arts with her fellow suffragettes and promoted her cause through public performance. That's on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. A new series of the panel show, The Unbelievable Truth, hosted by David Mitchell, begins today on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. Radio 3 in Concert features violinist Nicola Benedetti in works by Elgar, Chaminade and Debussy on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. Some suggestions for Tuesday, the 28th of April. In the first of a new series of All in the Mind, the programme explores how to navigate uncertainty during a time of global crisis and how to avoid feeling overwhelmed on Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m. In the series History's Heroes, Miss Lala and K-Ra Fly Through the Air tells the story of a 19th century circus performer and her acrobatic partner on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. Geoffrey Palmer reads The People on Privilege Hill by Jane Gardam, in which an elderly judge is preparing to go out for lunch at Dulcie's house, on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. In What's Up Docs, Chris and Sand van Tulligen talk about balance, what it is, why it's important to our health, and how to improve it. Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. In Touch brings us news, views and information for people who are blind or partially sighted, presented as usual by Peter White on Radio 4 at 8:40 p.m. Moving on to Wednesday the 29th of April, The Ultimate Trip marks the 50th anniversary of Stanley Kubrick's film classic 2001 A Space Odyssey on Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Shadows in Bronze is a dramatisation of Lindsay Davis's detective thriller set in first century Rome, starring Anton Lesser as sleuth Falco, on Radio 4 Extra at 6:30 a.m., 11:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. Choral Evensong comes from Christ Church Cathedral, Oxford, on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. In the series Human Intelligence, the programme examines the remarkable way in which writer and philosopher Denis Diderot connected ideas and people through his work editing one of the very first encyclopedias in the 18th century. Radio 4 at 8:45 p.m. Then on Thursday the 30th of April, there's a dramatisation of Agatha Christie's In a Glass Darkly on Radio 4 Extra at 6:30 a.m, 11:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. The third series of Mind Your Own Business, the sitcom about a wheeler dealer and his chief accountant, starring Bernard Cribbins and Frank Thornton, begins on Radio 4 Extra at 7 a.m, 12 noon and 6 p.m. In Open Country this week, Martha Kearney learns about efforts to preserve plants and wildlife within roadside verges on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. A.E. Housman's famous poem, A Shropshire Lad, is performed by Simon Russell Beale on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. And Amal Rajan and guests offer their insights into the biggest news stories of the week in Radical on Radio 4 at 11 p.m. And so to Friday, the 1st of May. In Fort Dunlop, three generations of the same family talk about their working life in the Fort Dunlop building in Birmingham on Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. The celebration of Dame Joanna Lumley's 80th birthday today continues with Meltdown, a comedy in which she stars as a famous actor who reaches the end of her patience, on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. Gardener's Question Time presents an archive edition with tips and advice for creating summer colour in the garden, on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. And finally, Friday night is Music Night. This week takes as its theme the 80th anniversary of spying activities in Cheltenham and includes, among other works, the main themes from Lawrence of Arabia and Schindler's List, as well as a James Bond medley. It's on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. Enjoy your listening week.
TNS Soundings.
Hi, this is Kate and I'm reading you some articles from the Express and Star dated the 21st of April. Bad memories of school PE deters exercise. A significant number of people in midlife do not exercise because they feel held back by past sports memories, including challenging PE lessons and feeling self-conscious, a leading charity has said. A new poll conducted on behalf of Age UK found that 3 in 10 said that they still felt traumatised by school PE lessons. Some 28% said school PE lessons put them off exercise and sports for life. The poll conducted by Yonder on 2,385 UK adults aged 50 to 65 also found that 2 in 5 still recall being picked last for teams. And the same number again are haunted by memories of being body conscious during school activity classes. As a result, the charity has launched a new campaign urging people to take up sports in later life through inclusive classes and activities. The campaign has been backed by Olympians Dame Kelly Holmes and Sally Gunnell. Dame Kelly said, "The benefits of sport and exercise are endless. It doesn't matter whether you're a professional athlete competing on a world stage or a busy parent who's just managed to carve out a few hours for yourself one evening a week to head along to your local netball group." And this article is supported by a photograph of a relay race. US TikTok star visits the Black Country but finds the accent tough to understand. When it comes to accents, the UK has a lot of them. A lot more than the US, despite the country being a mere fraction of the size. And one of the most famous accents of them all is the Black Country accent, though some seem to find it difficult to understand at times. This is exactly what happened when famous American TikToker, who's recognised for his travels across the UK, stopped off in Dudley to visit the Black Country Living Museum. In a video which has gained more than 20,000 likes, Kalani Ghost Hunter dubbed the Black Country accent, also known as Yam Yam, as the toughest accent to understand yet. Standing on a canal boat, he said, "We're in Dudley and the folks here are lovely, but I don't really know what many people are saying. It's a very tough accent for me to understand. We're on the canal boat here at the Black Country Living Museum. It's beautiful here. It's a really cool place, but I don't know what anyone's saying." Black Country-based fans of the influencer took to the comments laughing about the confusion, with one user writing, "Aw, am you all right, Bab?" The Black Country dialect is one of the oldest in the country. "We missed the great vowel shift, so we spake different, don't we?" Another added, "The closest to Old English, that's why mush." The museum themselves even responding with, "What yow mean you call understand us?" However, if you didn't let the small problem get in the way of having a good time. In a separate clip from his visit, he was seen trying old school fish and chips made with beef dripping. He said he would definitely recommend it for the flavour and the backdrop that is like stepping back in time. He also tried the traditional belly filler bread pudding, which is described as very dense and brick-like, though he loved the flavour and would prefer to pair it with a cup of tea. At the end of his day at the heritage site, the influencer wrote, "The Black Country Living Museum was well worth the stop. It's such a wonderful way to learn about life from years past and to appreciate how much this area contributed to the Industrial Revolution, innovations that helped shape the modern world." I personally follow Kalani and he travels all over the UK, going to different places, trying different foods, different experiences. And he absolutely loves the UK. He's got so many nice things to say about us. So it was really, really lovely when I saw personally on Facebook that he'd actually gone to the Black Country Living Museum. And I'm not really surprised he might struggle with our accent, but you know, it's brilliant to see people come into the area and bigging up the things that we have here. People forced to suffer due to a desert of public toilets. Huge shortfall has profound impact on those who need to access a loo. People are forced to suffer due to public toilet deserts across England, says health leaders. Newest analysis by the Royal Society for Public Health, which the acronym for this in brackets is RSPH, found a significant shortfall in the country, with facilities dropping by 14% since 2016. Its calculations suggest that there are now 15,481 people for every public toilet in England. The data is based on more than 200 Freedom of Information requests to councils in charge of providing public toilets. The RSPH warned that a lack of toilets increased the number of people who then urinate in public, creating unhygienic conditions. It also pointed to a potential knock-on effect for local businesses after its research suggested some people avoid going out due to a lack of public facilities. Other people restrict their fluid intake, risking dehydration, the RSPH said. William Roberts, chief executive of the RSPH, said, "Access to public toilets isn't a universal need that we all have, and we shouldn't shy away from talking about it. One public toilet for per 15,000 people simply isn't good enough. And without action, that figure will continue to rise as we lose more facilities. For some people, access to public toilet can be the difference as to whether they leave the house. For others, it can lead to deliberately restricting fluid intake to avoid the need to use incontinence toilet. And the effects also go far beyond the individual. Having an insufficient number of public toilets has inevitably unsanitary consequences, creating unpleasant environments that degrade our public realm. As a country, we can and should be doing better. We need to create public spaces that people want to spend time in, and this means giving local authorities the resources they need to provide the facilities that we all rely on. To help boost the number of public toilets, the RSPH is calling for new strategic authorities to have a duty to ensure that there are sufficient public toilets in the places people go, supported by funding from central government. It's also said developers must do more, calling for regulations that would require public toilets to be included in any development that includes non-residential units. At present, local councils get to decide on how many toilets are needed within their area. According to the RSPH, since 2016, there have been a 14% overall reduction in public toilets across England. In devolved nations, the situation is better, with around 8,500 people per public toilet in Scotland and 6,748 in Wales. A spokesman for the local government association said, "The lack of public toilet can be disproportionately affect vulnerable groups, including older people, people with disabilities, those with medical conditions, babies and children, and people that find themselves sleeping rough. Funding pressures have caused councils to rethink provision. The maintenance of a public toilet could cost a council £25,000 a year. Vandalism and antisocial behaviour cost councils millions of pounds a year, which means councils having to invest more into regular cleaning and better security, meaning that the taxpayer foots the bill for the vandalism." Poor relation in rail station design. I recently visited the new West Midlands rail stations and was taken back by the build quality of the three Camp Hill stations, Moseley Village, Pineapple Road and King's Heath, in comparison to the Willenhall and Darlaston stations. The Camp Hill line stations' lift shafts have a complementary brick skin around them, which were aesthetically pleasing on the skyline, proudly displaying their attached British Rail logos. Bricks have also been used to good effect on boundary and retaining walls. It's a staggering contrast to the Willenhall and Darlaston stations, which have used concrete blocks and cladding for the same purpose. It compromises the aesthetic aspirations of the station's appearance. Good quality architecture transforms rail stations into landmarks. It improves the local community and the passenger user experience, which begs the $64,000 question: who gave the green light brief to the design architects to disregard the brick is beautiful approach in favour for concrete blocks? This in turn shortchanged the residents of Willenhall and Darlaston on the aesthetic appearance of their railway stations. And this was a letter sent in to the Express and Star by Stephen Aston, who lives in Willenhall. Dad takes a tumble after being charged by a deer. Big Trev. I was just trying to leave some water out for him, and this is how he repaid. A dad from Staffordshire took a painful tumble as he was charged by an angry deer outside of his home, moments after telling it, "I'll effing smash you." Andrew Price, 58, went crashing through his front door as he fled the stag while trying to give it some water outside of his property in Cannock. The grandfather of one said the deer, nicknamed Big Trev, had been coming to his road for the last couple of years and had even been able to hand feed him on occasion. But last Monday afternoon, the animal took an exception to Andrew's presence and chased him back into his own home with a painful fall. Video footage shows Andrew saying, "I'll effing smash you," as the stag began showing signs of aggression. He then shouts out, "Oh, effing hell." The creature charges and he falls back through his own front door. Off camera, Andrew can be seen can then be heard saying, "My effing flip-flop, Gina, I've just fallen over." Dad of two, Andrew, a retired auto electrician, said, "I was just trying to leave some water out for him and this is how he repaid me. I wasn't too badly hurt. I just crashed into the radiator as I fell through the door. My crock fell off and as I tried to get away, so that's caused me to fall. I think you can hear me say, I've lost my flip-flop." We live by Cannock Chase, so we have a lot of deer, and this one, who we've named Big Trevor or Big Trev, comes up to my home. I've been able to hand feed him and I leave some water out, which is all I was trying to do at that time. But obviously, as I bent down, they see that as a sign of aggression as they headbutt, so I think he saw me as a threat. I tried to offer him out as I knew that was about to do, but then I was the one that ended up on the floor. But usually he'll even hear my electric car coming and follow me up the road to my house. It's just on this occasion we had a little run-in. I don't blame him too much. He was just acting on instinct. And daughter Chantelle Alaby added, "There's never a dull moment with my dad." And a photograph looks like from the security camera outside this gentleman's house of him running back into the house as the deer's chasing him.
Albion Match Report. West Bromwich Albion secured their championship survival as they eased past Surrey Watford at the Hawthorns. First half goals from Isaac Price and Daryl DK gave the Baggies a 2-0 lead at the break before Danny Imrie's finish in the second half confirmed all 3 points and took Albion out of reach of their relegation rivals. A decision is still to come from the EFL to determine whether West Brom have breached profitability and sustainability rules, and if they are found guilty, they could be punished with a points deduction. But they have established an 8-point gap with 2 matches to play to the bottom three on the back of a 9-match unbeaten run under interim manager James Morrison. Watford, meanwhile, have now won just 3 league games in their past 19 since beating Birmingham City on the 1st of January. West Brom carrying plenty of momentum, having gone 8 league matches unbeaten prior to this fixture, began brightly and both Price and Josh Madger both tested Egil Selvik from distance after smart build-up play. The hosts did take the lead inside 20 minutes. Crystal Palace loanee Imre burst clear down the right-hand side and his cross, just behind forward DK, was confidently swept home by Price. Albion goalkeeper Max O'Leary to thank for protecting their lead after the Hornets almost mustered an instant response. West Brom failed to clear their lines and Nampalis Mendy caught the ball sweetly on the volley on the edge of the penalty area, but O'Leary produced an excellent save to deny a swift equaliser. Alex Mowat went close to doubling West Brom's lead on the half-hour mark when he drilled a first-time effort from the edge of the visitors' penalty area wide of the far post. But DK, who only netted his first goal of the season at Preston North End on Saturday, did clinch a crucial second before half-time when he stooped to nod in Price's free kick. Watford boss Ed Still turned to influential captain Imran Lusa in the hope he could inspire a second-half comeback. The visiting captain did play his part in the Hornets' best opportunity on the hour mark when he picked out Othmane Ma'ama on the left, but his delivery was only modestly headed into the gloves of O'Leary from close range by top scorer Luka Cherumgard. Any prospects of the away side finding their way back into the game were snuffed out with a little over 20 minutes remaining. Price glanced a header back into the path of Josh Madger, and while he was denied by Kebben's block, Imre was on hand to turn in the loose ball from inside the 6-yard box to seal a vital victory and lift Albion safely clear of the relegation zone. James Morrison, interim manager, said, They found a way to win. There were times in the game when it felt a bit flat, but once we stuck to the game plan, we started to hurt them on the sides. That's where the goals have come from. The fans deserve it. We've had a challenging time, but we're getting our rewards for a bit of belief. We have just got to remain on our jobs and finish the season as strongly as we have been doing. As professionals, it is our right to keep playing, and the fans would be disappointed if they didn't see the level of performances we've been giving. We can rest at the end of the season. It's where we wanted to be. It's a strange situation for everyone, but we'll keep doing our jobs on the pitch and enjoy this moment and keep working hard like I demand.
I'm repeating now some information about the upcoming council elections next month, which I cut short a bit last week, but here's the information in full, which is a little bit too late for postal voters, but certainly relevant to those who will or can vote on the day.
In May, you will be voting to elect your local councillors. All 72 seats on Sandwell Council are up for election on Thursday the 7th of May 2026. Each of Sandwell's 24 wards has three councillors, meaning you can vote for up to three candidates at this election. There's a list of candidates standing in each ward on the council website, sandwell.gov.uk, and we've been working on recording the list, so the councillor putting the audio versions of the lists onto their website too. If you're not sure which ward you live in, you can check your poll card. Information for voters about the elections. Don't waste your vote. Select the three candidates you want to vote for on your ballot paper. You must vote for no more than three candidates. The name of your ward may have changed. This is due to changes in Sandwell's ward boundaries. Check your poll card if you are voting in person. Your polling station may have changed. If you vote in person at a polling station, you must take valid photographic ID. If you don't have a valid form of photographic ID, you can apply for some free photographic ID called a voter authority certificate. If you are struggling to apply for voter ID yourself, please call Sandwell Council's Voter ID helpline on 0121 569 6999 or pop into Sandwell Council House in Oldbury, where staff can help you. Postal votes will start being delivered from 2 weeks before the local elections. If you're voting at a polling station, they are open from 7 a.m. until 10 p.m. on polling day, the 7th of May. Votes will be counted on Friday the 8th of May, and results of the election will be published on the council website as soon as they are declared. Deadlines. The deadline for registering to vote in time for the local elections is 11:59 p.m. on Monday the 20th of April. If you want to vote by post in the local elections, you have until 5 p.m. on Tuesday the 21st of April to apply for a postal vote. Postal votes now last for up to 3 years. If you've previously voted by post and you applied for a postal vote before the 30th of January 2024 and did not respond to letters to renew it, your postal vote has now expired. If you want to continue to vote by post, you must renew your postal voting arrangement by making a new application. How long will each elected councillor serve? When there is a whole council election, the three candidates who receive the most votes are elected. Those candidates are elected for different terms. The first place candidate will be a councillor for 4 years. The second place candidate will be a councillor for 2 years. And the third place candidate will be a councillor for 1 year. This is because future elections will happen in three of every 4 years. The next local elections will take place in 2027, 2028 and 2030. And that was information from Sandwell Council's website about elections.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Heather with some information about what you can expect at the polling station as a visually impaired or disabled voter in the elections on Thursday the 7th of May 2026. This year, more than 5,200 seats are up for election across England, Scotland and Wales. In England, voters in 136 local authority areas will be choosing more than 5,000 councillors. And voters in seven areas will be choosing mayors. Originally, 30 of the 136 councils had planned to postpone their elections due to ongoing discussions about local government reorganisation. However, a successful legal challenge argued that postponing local elections was undemocratic, and now all the votes due this year will go ahead on the 7th of May. In Wales, voters will be choosing 96 members of the Senedd, which is the Welsh National Parliament. This is a significant change for Wales because previous Senedds have comprised only 60 members. This year's changes see 16 new constituencies created and the number of Senedd members increased by 36 to reach the new total of 96. In Scotland, all seats in the 129-strong Scottish Parliament are up for re-election. There are 73 constituency members of the Scottish Parliament, MSPs for short, and 56 regional MSPs to be elected. Each voter will have two ballot papers and will cast two votes, one to elect their constituency MSP and one to elect their area's regional MSPs. So, if you're going to your local polling station on the 7th of May, don't forget to take photo ID with you, because you must now show ID before you can cast your vote. Acceptable photo ID includes documents such as a passport or driving licence, a blue badge, older person's bus pass or a disabled person's bus pass. To be able to vote, you also need to be over 18 and on the electoral register held by your local authority. But what help can you expect if you're visually impaired or have a different disability? The Electoral Commission sets out rules for election officials on what they must make available to enable everyone to vote independently and in secret. All polling stations must be wheelchair accessible and are required to have the following in place to help visually impaired or disabled voters. A tactile voting machine that fits over the ballot paper to help make sure you mark your cross in the correct place. A large print copy of the ballot paper, although this is for reference only and you can't cast your vote on the large print version. Magnifiers to help you see the print on the ballot paper. Additional lighting. Wheelchair height voting booths. Grips to help voters hold the pencil steady while voting. And assistance from polling station staff to be guided to the voting booth and to mark your vote if needed. As an alternative to help from the polling station staff, if you're visually impaired, you can bring a companion to help you vote. Your chosen companion can guide you and assist you in the polling station instead of the election staff. They could also vote on your behalf if that's what you want. A companion can be anyone aged over 18. They need to take photo ID along with them and will be required to make a written declaration that you have asked for assistance. If you need anything other than the items listed above, election officers are also able to provide equipment to help people vote, such as audio devices and hearing induction loops. However, these are not compulsory, so if you need this type of help, you can contact your local council in advance to make a request.
Scientific advances offer hope for patients with sight loss. In summary, doctors have discovered new ways to treat low eye pressure and dry macular degeneration. Trials of both treatments have delivered sight improvements for patients and brought hope that more people could benefit as the new discoveries are rolled out more widely. This article is written by Heather and read by Vivian. Two recent trials have discovered new ways of treating eye conditions, and both offer potential for wider application to help more people suffering from sight loss. In one breakthrough, doctors at Moorfields Eye Hospital in London discovered that a low-cost gel could restore vision for patients with hypotony, an unusual but dangerous condition caused by low pressure in the eyeball. Meanwhile, in California, the inventors of a tiny microchip were looking for volunteers with advanced age-related dry macular degeneration to sign up for trials to help them read again. Some 32 patients joined the trial, including 5 in the UK, to have a microchip implanted behind one retina with a wireless link to video glasses. First, let's find out more about the gel treatment. Moorfields Hospital in London is home to a dedicated clinic for people with hypotony. This is a condition where the pressure in the eyeball becomes too low and the eye can start to collapse. The low pressure is caused by a lack of the natural jelly-like fluid inside the eye. This deficit can be caused by a range of factors. For example, an infection, a reaction to medication, or an after-effect of eye surgery. It's a serious problem as it can lead to blindness. Until this trial, the standard treatment for hypotony used steroids and silicone oil to plump up the eye. However, there were problems. For example, the silicone oil could be difficult to see through. The treatment didn't restore much vision, and the substances used could be toxic if used long term. Looking for an alternative, the Moorfields doctors decided to try an alternative treatment using a low-cost, transparent, water-based gel. The gel, known as HPMC or hydroxypropyl methylcellulose, was already used in some types of eye surgery. But rather than using it as a one-off, the Moorfields team decided to inject it into the main part of the eye as a new regular treatment. Gel was injected every 3 to 4 weeks for a total of 10 months, with remarkable results, increasing the size and pressure of the eyes and restoring sight. 7 of the 8 patients who received the treatment experienced improvements in vision and eye pressure after a 12-month course of the treatment. Moorfields consultant Harry Petrushkin, who led the work, said, "We are excited that this simple treatment has proved so effective for patients with this rare condition. This is the start of a process of understanding more about the balance of fluid inside the eye, leading to improved care for our patients. There are now hopes that the treatment can be made more widely available, although there is still more work to do to work out which patients can benefit." And now let's turn to the high-tech implants being tested on patients with dry age-related macular degeneration. People with age-related macular degeneration typically suffer from blurred or distorted central vision, making it difficult to read or to see details. However, they often retain some photoreceptor cells and retinal neurons in their optic nerve that can pass visual information to the brain, allowing some peripheral vision. Aiming to help improve sight for people living with this problem, scientist Daniel Palanca from Stanford University in California collaborated with colleagues to develop a microchip called Prima. Prima is a tiny 2mm square solar-powered wireless microchip that is only the thickness of a human hair. The chip is implanted in the back of the patient's eye, and, once in place, it can receive images via an infrared transfer and send those images along the optic nerve to the patient's brain. It's a complicated multi-stage process, as the images need to be captured and processed before they can be sent to the brain. In simple terms, it works like this. The images are first of all captured by a small camera mounted on a pair of glasses. All images are captured in black and white. The camera sends an infrared beam of the images to the implanted Prima chip. The Prima chip sends the images back to the small pocket-sized processor, which enhances the images to make them clearer. And finally, the enhanced images are sent back to the brain via the Prima chip and the optic nerve, allowing the patient to see the images. The results of the trial so far are impressive. After a year, 27 of the 32 patients given the implant were able to read again using their central vision. The glasses allowed them to magnify what they were seeing by up to 12 times and to adjust the brightness and contrast. At the moment, Prima only uses black and white images, but the developers hope a colour version may be possible in future. While restoring the ability to read is life-changing for the patients involved in the trial, it is fair to say that getting used to Prima came with some challenges. About two-thirds of the volunteers experienced short-term side effects following implants, including high pressure in the eye, although this didn't prevent vision improvements. The other challenge was learning how to use the combination of Prima, glasses and pocket processor, which took several months. In the UK, Sheila, age 70, was one of the patients who signed up for Prima trials at Moorfields Eye Hospital. She said that learning to read using the system needed huge concentration, but she's delighted with the results. She only uses the system indoors because she needs to hold her head very still and apply great concentration to be able to read. Sometimes she needs to put a pillow under her chin to steady her head so that she can focus on the letters of the word she's trying to read. Mahi Mukwit is a consultant surgeon at Moorfields who led the UK arm of the trial. He said the Prima system was the first implant to give patients meaningful vision that they can use in their daily life, such as reading and writing. Prima is not yet licensed, so it's not available outside clinical trials. But let's hope that the results of the trials mean it could be made more widely available in the future.
TNF Soundings.
Now, to end with, I don't know how many, if any, listeners still use Longwave to listen to Radio 4, but later this year, I think in the autumn, the Longwave transmitter will be turned off. I'm not sure I've still got a radio that gets Longwave, but it's just possible one or two of our listeners might, and I believe there's a campaign to try and keep Longwave, but I think that is certainly doomed. So listen on if you do happen to be one of those who still listen on Longwave, or indeed has a meter that depends on the data services that are transmitted along with the Longwave signal. And I wonder how many people knew that.
BBC confirms Radio 4 Longwave service closure this year. BBC Radio 4 Longwave service will close later this year after confirmation of shutdown plans for the 198 frequency. In an update yesterday, the BBC said listeners will be given at least 2 months' notice before the service ends, alongside daily on-air reminders aimed at helping audiences move to FM, DAB and other platforms for BBC Radio 4 content. According to the corporation, the long-wave transmission system operated by an external provider is reaching the end of its operational life. While listening habits have shifted towards FM and DAB services in recent years, it adds that continued investment in upgrading the infrastructure is not considered cost-effective for license fee-funded broadcasting. The BBC will also publish guidance through its website and helpline to support listeners in finding alternative ways to access Radio 4. Programming once long-wave transmissions cease. Separate information is being provided for users of older electricity meters that rely on the radio teleswitching service carried via the long-wave signal. The BBC says this system is managed by the energy industry rather than the broadcaster, and customers should contact their energy supplier or relevant regulator for advice on upgrades or replacement.
And that piece was taken from Radio Today, which is an online radio information service.
A big thank you to all our volunteers who've read the Express and Star articles for us this week. James, Debbie, Lauren, Sarbjit, Jenny and Kate. Thanks to Sarah Ann for doing the quiz, to Sue for picking the articles, and thanks to Cyrita, who is now back uploading everything to the SVI website so that you can listen to this as a podcast, and to the Talking News Federation website as well. Well, have a lovely week, everybody. Enjoy the sunshine, if it's still there this week as you listen. It is now. Looking forward to apparently 21 degrees this Saturday, but we'll see if that had happened by the time you listen to this.
Thank you, Pam. And I do hope we're in for a warmer spell in the next day or two, if it's going to be colder, as the site, I think it was a BBC site, predicts it's going to be cooler next week, 7 or 8 degrees throughout the week, I believe. I look forward to seeing Pam and others at the meeting. I think Mary, a long-time listener, will be amongst those turning up for the meeting at the town hall. I've heard of Heather Wastey in passing, who is something of an expert on the Black Country dialects. It'd be interesting to hear that, and it's relevant, that article on Tuesday. The American guy who couldn't understand what the Black Country people were saying at the Black Country Museum. Well, we've had a little bit more time for this edition. That is down to In Touch being a little shorter than usual, but that's following on from me, at least for postal listeners. But for now, bye-bye for this week. We'll see you in May, just around the time of the elections. Thank you to everybody, of course, who brings the paper to us. And I'm very glad that James and Sarita are back with us. And we'll hear from Sarita in due course, because she's a good reader too. So I hope we can recruit her services for doing a bit of reading if she's not too busy being a new mom. Bye-bye for now, and I'll be back with you next week.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.